And get the meeting started. And we'll talk about this a little bit more when Lynn, now that she's kind of got a heads up on what's going to happen with that. It is February 16th, 2022, and I'm calling this special meeting to order and turning it right over to Greg Geist.
Good evening, everyone, and genuinely thankful that you were able to make this meeting tonight. It was what we call a topical. A special meeting because we also have a full agenda in March. And this particular item kind of is foundational for at least one of the items that we're going to be talking about in March, which is the financial strategy. So this one seemed like a good one to get done so that we can make sure that we make progress in March. So again, I appreciate your, changing your schedules and being able to be here tonight. We're hopefully going to keep it to an hour and get some good work done. So with that, I will turn it over to Lynn. Lauren, are you going to run the presentation or is Lynn? Lauren's going to run it. Okay. So let's get going.
Okay. And I'll add my thanks to Greg's for being here. I know it's an imposition, an extra meeting, but really appreciate your attending and your commitment. And William, I hear you. We tried really hard to make this not deep into highly technical material. And so I'm hoping my presentation will help walk you through it, that the outline or the table of contents is a good idea. This will front a report that's hundreds of pages in length.
And yeah.
From our perspective, this is just a quick summary. So anyway, that's, and so hopefully ask questions as we go along, and hopefully my walking you through it will bring you along. It is not meant to be persuasive, but your point is well taken. This is a an engineering evaluation. Okay. Tonight, we're going to ask for your support for the recommendations put forth in the Willamette Facilities Plan. The most significant of these recommendations is for a wet weather expansion at the Tri-City facility. And so none of this material is new. It's what I've presented over the months before. And it's the same presentation that you were going to hear in January. So no changes there. But it was presented a little bit differently. I will admit that the consultant in their report presented it a little differently. So I'll walk you through it and hopefully just ask questions as we go. All right, next. Facilities planning process. You've seen this before. What we do in a facilities plan is look at our facilities today, and that's in this case Kellogg and Tri-Cities. And the capacity, the condition, and then look at what we're going to need in 20 years. What will the treatment requirements be as best as we can tell? What kind of capacity we'll need and what we need to do to address any condition issues between now and then. Then we, being engineers, look at different alternatives of how we get from here to there. And we evaluate those and come up with, pick one and recommend it as a path forward. And that's what this document does. I'd like to speak briefly because it was in the report, and I haven't really addressed this before. We did a really in-depth condition assessment at both Tri-City and Kellogg, and the reason we did this even over and above what's normally done for facilities plan is because we wanted to populate our asset management database. And so we evaluated every piece of equipment at those two facilities and measured both risk and consequence of failure and then gave them a rating so we can prioritize what we need to address in terms of fixing things that need fixing at the treatment plant.
Excellent.
Next up is capacity. Next slide. And so because we're able to shift flow from Kellogg to Tri-City, we looked at both service areas kind of together. And with an eye towards maximizing use of both of our facilities. If we have extra capacity sitting unused at one facility, how do we shift flow to use that if we don't have it at the other facility? And that's what's a unique feature of this facilities plan. Next slide. So you'll remember that in wastewater treatment, we look at two regulatory seasons, dry season, which is summer, May to October, and the wet season. And in the dry weather, we're mostly concerned with biochemical oxygen demand, BOD, and we talked about that before, and TSS, total suspended solids, so BOD and TSS. That's called loads. And that is directly proportional, that's organic loads, it's directly proportional to the number of people you have living in your service area. In the wet weather, on the other hand, we're concerned with flow. And for any given storm, because this has to do with rainwater getting in the system, that's a function of the number of acres in the service area, the miles of pipe, and their condition. We've talked about I&I for years. And our 2019 Collection System Master Plan recommended reducing I&I by 65% in 19 basins. They were identified. And this facilities plan, everything in it, assumes that that will be done. So our planning builds on, one thing builds on another. Next slide, dry season. Next slide. So, as I said, in the dry weather, we are concerned about load, which is directly proportional to population. And left side of the graph shows BOD, and the right side shows TSS. They're generally about the same level. They kind of travel together. Average, max month, max week. When we design capacity or thinking about capacity of, and the blue line is now, the orange line is 2040, and the gray line is build out. And again, directly proportional to population and secondary treatment and solids processing. Some parts of treatment plants, their capacity is related to load, and that's why we look at it. Next slide. And we looked at, you've seen this before, and we're assuming in the facilities plan our current permit conditions, which require us to remove BOD and TSS. And scenario one is our current permit limits. But we also looked at what if they do add nutrient removal between now and 2040. And so we looked at what we would do under those conditions. There is no cost in this facilities plan associated with dry weather capacity. We're good, with one exception. Next slide.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, maybe it's just my background, but I'm really puzzled as to how we chose the Ukrainian flags for this.
This is like my little shorthand. Swedish, right? Blue and yellow?
No, that's Ukraine. It's my business. It's what I do.
Okay. Well, yellow means sunny summer with no nutrient removal. Blue means wet weather season. Blue is rainy. Green means nutrient removal because it's greener. And that's my shorthand.
Does anybody else know that?
No. Well,
it's very shorthand, yeah.
The people that worked on the report, this is our code.
Everybody needs codes. Okay.
Yep, that's how we talk about things. So the one exception to dry weather projects associated with the plan is at Kellogg. The solids processing at Kellogg, the need for capacity is related to load and population. That plant was built in the 1970s. Population has grown, and so the load has increased. And so the blue bar is the available capacity, The orange bar is what's required currently in terms of capacity, and the gray is what's required in 2040. There's three solids processes: thickening, digestion, and dewatering. We are over capacity and need to add capacity for thickening. Digestion's good. Dewatering, we currently haul our solids to Tri-City for processing, and we're recommending that we add dewatering at Kellogg. So we have a project in our capital plan to add thickening and dewatering, expand thickening and add dewatering at Kellogg. That is all for dry season. Are there any other questions?
When you talked about that previous slide, talks about the load, there's no dollar amounts attached to that, right?
No, the dollar amount is between 25 and 30 million, and that you will find in the back of the cap of the report.
Hey, Lynn, I did have a question, and it was, I guess, of the same ilk as Williams, and maybe just asking you to dive a bit deeper, I guess, into the cost of that. So for solids handling, it does look like the majority of that $41 million is a lot of replacement of existing assets. But the one kind of bullet that does call out expansion does seem to relate to that solids handling, and it must be this thickening. And I was just curious for that increase in capacity. That's one of three bullets, and those three bullets collectively you have at $24.3 million. Could you kind of expand a little bit on what the increase is? Is it the majority of that $24 million, or is it a pretty small number comparatively?
For thickening?
Yeah, if that's the expansion that's being discussed in the bullet that's in the plan. And I guess the reason I'm sort of curious is that I think in the past, the growth projections for the area haven't been quite as robust as forecasted. And so I was just sort of curious to start to understand, you know, if it's the year 2040 and we're looking back and the population hasn't grown as much as we expect it to, did we overbuild anything? And if so, what are those? I was just kind of curious what those cost implications are.
So you can see that we're at capacity today on thickening. So when we build, we will build for, and we need to build, we will build that for 20 years. The thickening, the cost of the, and I'm having trouble, my report was up, but it's not now. It's just blank pages. So I don't have those costs in front of me for the whole project. There are costs in that project for thickening, for doing work on the digesters, and for dewatering.
This is the digester gas utilization at 5.9 million.
Yeah.
R&R projects, 7.9. Disinfection, 2.8.
Yeah, the disinfection is not included here.
Okay.
This is just solids processing. Well, the plan is to repurpose the area in the middle of the Kellogg plant and build a solids facility there that will house thickening, the engine, and the dewatering process.
Okay. And I guess that was a long-winded question. So it sounds like we need an expansion regardless. And so even if the population doesn't grow quite to what's been forecasted, it doesn't sound like we're stuck with a stranded asset or anything of that sort.
No. And the the dewatering is just moving it from Tri-City to Kellogg. It's relocating where we're doing the work.
Okay.
And we did do an evaluation on that, and that came out the most reasonable thing to do.
Okay.
Most cost effective.
Lynn? What's the flip side of that moving the dewatering? I mean, I assume if we're going to do it one place, we don't have to do it someplace else. Is there a saving someplace else?
Yeah, there's a saving in not having people truck our solids and all the water from Kellogg to Tri-City to dewater it.
So that's a cost savings and an environmental savings.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a quick question too. How does Milwaukee feel about this? Because at one time, they were not happy about expanding anything at Kellogg. So are they okay with this? Do we have to convince them?
Lynn, I'll jump in. The issue, we're not expanding the capacity at overall at Kellogg. So it's a 20, what are we at? 25, designed for 25. Part of our project was getting it back up to 25 because, well, I won't go into that, but, or expand the footprint. And so this will do neither of those things. So we haven't gone to Milwaukee and gotten their feedback on it. But because we don't believe that it is germane, it's not expanding the overall capacity of the facility and it's not expanding the footprint.
And frankly, if Milwaukee densifies, that while we're not expanding the liquid capacity, and we have sufficient capacity to treat loads, we do have to haul it off.
Yeah, and it just strikes me that I have talked to them about this and about the truck traffic that it will reduce. So there'll be a lot fewer trucks coming out of that facility on a daily basis. I thought that was of interest to Milwaukee, and they liked that too. So they have heard about it.
How many trucks is it a day?
5 to 7.
Okay.
I'll just throw in, by the way, when Milwaukee was going through their land use planning exercise, they actually were concerned that we would have insufficient capacity at Kellogg to handle their anticipated urban densification. We're checking in with Lynn around capacity at Kellogg. So I would say, Michael, to your point, Milwaukee's changed their perspective about Kellogg, and they want to make sure that it's a strong, viable asset for their community going forward into the future.
That's great. Anyone else have any other questions?
Yeah, Chris, I got my report up, and it's $24 million is the cost we're carrying for the solids handling.
And thank you. And I guess not all of that was for expansion explicitly, though, right?
Okay. Correct. Yeah. And we pulled the digester gas utilization out of that cost. That's the 25 to 30 was that's where it's in my head. But we called that out as a separate line item because it's optional.
And Michael made me think of this. It might be worth if with conversations with Milwaukee, like, will this produce more odor? If the odor is an issue,
it's
messaging that appropriately.
It's something we would be really careful about, and the facility would be similar to what we just constructed at Tri-City, where the trucks were moving it to the middle of the plant, so it's buffered from the neighbors, and the truck goes into a closed building to get loaded with the biosolids, and it's all odor controlled. Good question, though. Okay. Can we move on? Wet season?
Sorry, Lynn. I was trying to get off mute. There's a question in the chat from Rita, who's having dinner, asking about the capacity with the additional density for the middle housing and the clusters that are now the state now allows, duplexes, triplexes, things like that. I know we looked at that or considered that, particularly for Milwaukee, and we found that it wasn't an issue. But now I forget. Can you explain that?
Sure. We did look at it for Milwaukee. And, you know, we can move flow from Kellogg to Tri-City, but it's upstream of Milwaukee. And so if the city of Milwaukee densifies and we have higher loads coming in from Milwaukee, then we have the flexibility to divert flow upstream over to Tri-City where we have excess dry weather capacity.
Okay, thank you.
And Greg, I'm not seeing anything in the chat box on my screen, so if you get anything else, let me know.
Okay.
Neither did I. So now we're talking about wet weather and we're talking about flow. And all the numbers I'm going to talk about assumes INI reduction, as I mentioned. The average dry, the blue bar is our current flows, average, max month, and peak hour. The orange is 2040. The gray's build out. The red line across the graph is the 25 million gallons a day we can take at Kellogg, and the rest is what we have to treat at Tri-City. And if you look back in the report or on your paper slides that you have, you will see that we don't have this huge ratio between peak and average on our loads, on our BOD and TSS. It's pretty constant. But the ratio on the flow is quite large. And that's due to INI. Next slide. So how much capacity do we have at Tri-City to treat wet weather? Well, several unit processes are sized based on wet weather. Some, like I said, are sized on load. And this chart, blue being available capacity, orange required current capacity, and gray future 2040 required capacity. This shows that we are at or over capacity in several of our unit processes today at Tri-City. Next slide. And remember that these peak flows don't happen very often, right? We are most of the time we're below 35 MTD, which is full secondary treatment at Tri-Cities. It's just those, when a storm comes in, the flows go up, and it happens a couple times a year. We have to treat that flow. That's why we want to minimize the peaks. Next slide. Our current treatment, wet weather treatment at Tri-City, our capacity is 70 million gallons a day. And we treat 25 million gallons through conventional treatment. Another 10 can go through the MBR. On the rare occasions we're over 35, we give anything over that primary treatment and disinfection. That allows us to meet permit. Most of that excess 35 MTD is rainwater, and that's how we currently treat it. Our proposal, next slide, is to add a process that's enhanced primary treatment. We're going to need to treat 105 million gallons a day, up from 70 in 2040. Enhanced primary treatment will allow us, it's not a biological treatment, but it's more than just settling the solids out of the wastewater. We add a coagulant to it, and that provides better treatment. We disinfect it, and then out combined with the rest of the effluent. That's our proposal. The cost for this is about $54 million. And this is what we're going to propose to DEQ for their approval. There is a chance they will require us to provide additional treatment, biological treatment, which provides not very measurable, not measurable, water quality advantages. It's and costs another $30 million. I'm just making you aware that that will be our conversation with DEQ. This is what we're going to propose as you see it here. Are there any questions about that?
You said that it's possible they are going to require something.
Biological treatment, which is another step in here, in the middle of the where that line is, it would be another box.
So it's but you're, just because that's a new law regulation that's coming up, or it's just because of the expansion?
It's an existing law, and Greg can explain it better than I can, because he's to be a regulator. But the Clean Water Act requires all flow to receive biological treatment. Whether you can meet the permit or not without it.
Mm. But that's a huge jump. It's $30 million for the one more step.
Right. And it's very complicated to operate, to be honest, because to move biology over and only use it for a couple days is complicated.
Wow.
To treat what is basically rainwater.
So what do you think the possibility of that happening is? I probably should have asked Greg that, because you've been with DEQ before. And is there a way to convince them that that's, if the result is negligible, that it's not necessary?
I can tell you we will try. And there are facilities in Oregon and in the Northwest that do this and successfully do it. Salem does it. They do it, I want to say Olympia, but up in Washington. So it's successfully done, and that's what we'll argue.
And it really is, I wouldn't say a roll of the dice, because we're going to make a compelling argument, and we will push as hard as we possibly can. But there's just never a guarantee. We want to say that this is perfectly adequate from a water quality standpoint, and why spend $30 million on something that is not going to move the needle? That said, you know, EPA has to approve the permits that DEQ issues. They have a review process, and someone at EPA could throw a wrench in the works. And that's a different, more difficult, rock to push up the hill.
Next slide. This shows you the site layout of the facilities we're recommending. The blue is the enhanced primary treatment, the $54 million project. The orange is the additional biological treatment. That's what it would look like on the ground or from an airplane.
Or a drone.
Yep. Next slide. And as I've mentioned before.
Whoops. Oh, this is the one. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't need to know what all these rectangles are. My point on this slide is the blue is still what we plan to build immediately. But when we design this, we have to design it so it fits like a puzzle piece with everything that will come after, clear out through build out. And if we have nutrient removal, and that's what all of this is. I mean, we literally do calculations and make sure the water can flow downhill through all of this someday. And so we have to locate vertically these facilities exactly right so that we don't have a stranded investment when we build the next step.
Lynn, where's dot 1.2?
What is it? What's it called?
Ballasted.
To the left of the red.
Oh, bell. Over there. Okay. Yeah. It just wasn't in blue. So, okay.
Ballasted sedimentation. Ballasted sedimentation is what the process is.
I love this stuff. Great. Thank you.
Now, Lynn, what is the expected timeline for build out?
You know, I'm always hesitant to put a date on it, but past 2080. Mm-hmm.
So we would have capacity then probably through 2080.
Right. What we're building now gives us capacity through 2040.
Mm-hmm.
Between now and then, somebody will do this again and project out what we need for the next 20 years.
Right.
I was just thinking in terms of the land available. So after that, there might be a need to acquire some more land, potentially.
By definition, build out means everything in the UGB is built and we wouldn't need any more.
Mm-hmm. As long as they don't expand the UGB.
Right. But we're required to plan for the UGB. Greg?
Yeah, I think we've had this conversation before. This master plan, though, doesn't include anything addressing PFAS, if you have to start dealing with that.
There is no treatment for that as we speak.
Yet.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of the IIJA Act, if I remember right, money for something, whatever it is. So.
It's okay. Studying it, I believe. And honestly, PFAS is like copper or mercury or some of the metals, they're controlled at the source and not treated. Copper from water supply pipes gets, you know, is in the wastewater. We don't treat for copper removal. You address it at the source. Mm. And, you know, PFAS is comes from cookware and other things, I think, if I have that right. And yeah.
Hair products, personal care products, right.
Yeah, I don't know. But think those would change.
Right. Yeah, and I would just say from a regulatory standpoint, it's very, very difficult to predict what DEQ might do. I mean, for mercury, you have to have a mercury reduction plan because you really can't treat down to the levels that you would need to. It's just not feasible. So if there was some kind of crazy technology that was insanely expensive that they wanted to require, it would apply to everyone. It would be a massive issue across the state and across the country. So, yeah.
But right now, the technology, save, you know, I suppose you could put it through a some sort of membrane at the molecular level, but that's not very green because it takes gobs of power. Yeah, it's just not there today, Greg.
Right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay.
Next slide. So this is the recommended implementation schedule. This was built by engineers for engineers. Here's what you will need, and here's when we think you'll need it. Not built by financial folks, but it's important to know when this is going to be needed. We did look at leveling some of this to the extent we could, but it was not. It was, here's what you need and here's when you should build it. And that's the schedule for the different projects. The peak flow hydraulic improvements, wet weather improvement at Tri-City, the first project there under Tri-City, they recommend that begin right away. There's the two different colors of the bars is design and then construction. And then near, medium, and far long-term R&R projects. Next slide. And this is how, taking that implementation schedule, this is the cash flow that would be required. And as Greg mentioned, this is related to a presentation you're going to hear in March around rates. To maintain and I won't get too far into it, but to maintain a 5% a year increase, we need to keep our expenditures below about $32 million a year. Well, this does that, but we have two big conveyance programs, tens of millions of dollars apiece, and a $40 million plus outfall that's in design. So this isn't the only project. So what I'm asking for today is your support for the projects and not the implementation schedule. That you support, this is the direction we should go, most particularly for the Tri-City wet weather expansion. That will allow us to go to the board and present this to them, and then go to DEQ to ask for their approval of our recommendation. And that will give us a green light then to move forward as we can afford it on the projects recommended here.
Do we need a motion?
Can I ask if there's any, William, just a second. I just want to, Greg has his hand back up.
Sorry.
Okay. No. All right. No, I just wanted to make sure there's no other questions before we do a motion. You're good to go, William.
Well, I would like to make a motion that the advisory committee supports the planning that's been going on this. I'm not quite sure how you need it phrased, Len, but I say do it.
A second.
We have a motion from William. We have a second. Who was the second?
Tony.
Oh, Kitts. Thank you, Anthony. All right, thank you. All right, and because we're on Zoom, I am going to ask for a thumbs up. And if there's anyone opposed, please do let me know right now. I think Lynn's work on this is phenomenal, and I think you've explained it in a way that I can understand. I mean, we've been hearing about it for a while, but I learned something new every time you throw a slide up. So it makes me a little worried, I have to say. There's things in here that are, the numbers are alarming, and especially the $30 million that may have to be, you know, tacked on top of this, depending on what DEQ does. So, but I think it's a good plan overall. And so that motion passes to move this on to the BCC. And Greg, is there anything else you need from the advisory committee on this?
No, I just wanted to echo your thoughts. Lynn and her team have done a fantastic job on this and always looking at ratepayer value and doing what needs to be done, but not more, and making conservative assumptions. And yeah, we had a great consulting team, and Lynn is really, really skilled at working with those teams to make sure that, you know, they don't get a little happy sometimes with the complexity or expenses. So
excellent.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yes, thank you, Lynn. It was nice to have Lynn all by herself tonight instead of tacking her on in a rush at the end of another meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. William, did the presentation help at all?
Yes, it did.
Very good. Anything else? We're gonna cut it off a little bit early. Is that all right with everyone? Do you want to?
No, drag it out. Tell a story.
I'm sure that breaks your heart, and that's a nice thing about a special meeting. If we can get through these faster than an hour, you know, we can get on with our evenings. So thank you all for attending and taking part in this, because we knew we had to throw an extra one in here before the March thing rolls around.
Good.
All right. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.